What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Jordan.
And this is Desmond.
And welcome to episode 204 of Two Black Nerds.
Yeah.
That's right. It's that time once again for us to bring you our opinions and hot takes on all things fandom, pop culture, and entertainment. As always, you can find Two Black Nerds wherever you get your podcasts. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a friendly rating and comment to show your support. And of course, join in on the conversation each and every week by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Two Black Nerds. We appreciate that. Love y'all. And let's not forget to mention we have merchandise that's available now at twoblacknerds.com. Go check out our Two Black Jedi and Sith collections inspired by Star Wars. We got t-shirts, crew neck city stickers, mugs, and tote bags, so go ahead and place those orders right now. On today's show, we'll be reviewing the latest episode of the Marvel Studios original series, Loki. We'll discuss all of the key moments and events that occurred, as well as how we're feeling about the series now that we're at the halfway point. But before we get to any and all of that, we're kicking off this week's podcast with our non-spoiler thoughts about the latest installment of the Disney Plus series. So we have already arrived at the midway point of season two of Loki, which means that the story is definitely moving at a breakneck speed. A lot of the momentum that is carried over from the previous two episodes, I would certainly say, has certainly made its way into episode three. But we know that these six episode Marvel Studios Disney Plus series have given us some challenges in terms of how we feel about them over the past few years. We know that typically at this point, I think that there's some reservations about their ability to wrap up stories and how much they can actually land the plane of what they kicked off with the series that they're you know, pretty much shepherding through at that time. But now with Loki sort of in its second season, you would believe that maybe they have a formula maybe down pat in terms of how they carry forth with this series. But I want to ask you, before we dive into spoilers and before we get into the real meat of this conversation about episode three of Loki, how do you feel about where we are right now, and how did you overall feel about season two, episode three of Loki?
Man, so when it comes to, I think, the six episode structure, to be honest, I'm not sure I'll ever be on board, no matter how much I like a show like this, unless it is a limited series, you know, knowing this is a season two, knowing there is a lot of a story that can and needs to be told within Loki and other Marvel properties. It's just something about six episodes that will always drive me the wrong way. That being said, we know Loki season one is a lot of our favorite, right? A lot of our a lot of us like that TV show in particular. Loki season one is our favorite MCU show. And even then, it's still not perfect, right? I still feel like there's moments in that first season where I'm like, man, I could use another episode or two and that would have been better, I think. And I think, you know, coming to this point in Loki season two, I still feel that, right? I think at the top, you were even saying how, like, everything is moving at a breakneck speed. And that is, to me, a result of having, you know, only three episodes left after watching this episode to have to wrap up, I think, some pretty important storylines. Again, especially given we've talked about during our Loki reviews how it feels like Loki feels like such an important TV show towards what we're going for in the MCU, towards what multiverse means, what these timelines mean, again, what the future of what Secret Wars could mean. Loki feels important, and you're still telling me it's only six episodes. And so even after watching this episode, which I don't have too many problems with, but it still feels like, man, in my back of my mind, I know there's only three left. How much can we possibly say in three episodes that propels us into another phase or into another, you know, story plot of the MCU that feels like this show did what it needed to do? You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. So overall, the episode is fine. There are some a lot of things I really like. Actually, I love just the way characters are brought together, to be honest. I like seeing how many people are involved in this episode. It's a very involved episode. And that being said, there's a lot of different story beats that characters are taking that I didn't expect them to take. I think they're making some very interesting choices and swings here regarding all of, to be honest, all of the characters we didn't see last week that we see in this episode, which is a Victor Timely and Renslayer and a Tara Strong as Miss Minutes, who she's definitely my favorite of the episode. Miss Minutes absolutely kills this episode to me. But there's just something about it that I just can't say, put my finger on it, that is not perfect for me. But did I enjoy myself? Absolutely. I had a blast with this episode. I think there's just a lot going on, and I think that can make or break, not necessarily make or break an episode, but sometimes you can be caught in the whirlwind and be like, dang, I don't know what necessarily to concentrate on or what exactly to look for in the episode. So again, overall, this episode, I still like it. Don't get me wrong. I still enjoyed myself, but there is a ton going on. And again, I think it's just, they have a lot of story to tell in such a small amount of time. But I had a decent time with it.
So I think that this most recent episode, episode 3, it's okay. It's an okay episode. I do think that it is superior to episode 3 of season 1, Lamentis, which was not an episode of television I particularly enjoyed when it was, you know, released with Loki season 1. Upon reflection, it does hold up a little bit better in the grand context of the story that they told with season 1. But I do remember at that time thinking, what in the hell was that? Like, it felt like that there was no real progress made besides some conversations between Sylvie and Loki. I do think that this episode 3, this midway point of the second season, is superior, and it does do some things a little bit more successfully in terms of setting the table for the remainder of what season 2 is going to be. That said, though, I do see that at this particular point, this episode is a little bit more uneven than the previous two, whereas, you know, the first one is just such a frenetic and chaotic situation, thrusting us back into the events following season 1. And episode 2 was certainly much more of a character study, where we really get to hone in on both Loki and Mobius and figure out where they are in their particular arcs. This one, I think, sidelines Loki, and not to the benefit of the episode, because it does have to reintroduce a lot of characters who have not been a part of this season thus far. That takes a lot of focus off of him. That makes things a little bit more, I think, chaotic and not in the best ways in terms of the pacing of the episode. And this has been the longest episode of the series of this particular season, I believe, thus far. But I don't know if it was necessarily to the benefit of the episode. I think that it could have even used less time and maybe a little bit more focus, because certain things felt a little contrived. Certain things felt, I think, a bit too convenient in terms of their placement, in terms of how they came to be. And it didn't feel as organic, I think, to the previous two episodes and how we've seen, you know, things develop. So it was an okay episode. There were a lot of things that I did enjoy, and certainly some memorable moments and some standout moments in particular for some characters who have been away and that got brought back in a big way in this episode. And I'm incredibly intrigued in terms of where they may go for the rest of the season, because there were certain things that I just didn't anticipate. But that being said, I do think that this one had some particular challenges and might be my least favorite of the season so far, which, you know, I do think that that is a testament to the fact that though Loki is probably the best MCU series on Disney Plus, it still is adhering to this formula that they have crafted, that they have been following with these shows, that will not be changed until hopefully in the near future, once we find out like what the next immediate show is after this that's going to come out. You know, we know that Marvel Studios is undergoing a change of philosophy, so to say, with their TV productions. But this was obviously made well before they made the decision to pivot, and so we'll still have to wait and see. So this is still sort of falling into the trappings, I think, of what we have seen out of these 6-episode seasons, and there is only but so much you can do. As good as a show could be, there is still limitations, I think, to that front. So this episode in particular, I think we started to see some of those cracks in that foundation. But with all of that out the way, if you have not seen episode 3 of the second season of Loki, definitely go check that out on Disney Plus and come back and finish out the rest of our conversation, because we're about to get into all the specifics. This episode is entitled 1893, and it's directed by Kasra Farahani, who also serves as the production designer of Loki. So he's stepping in the director's chair. He's also written on previous episodes of the series. He's long been an employee over at Marvel Studios and has worked on a variety of other projects as well. So this is taking us really into the past. We know that this has been a lot of a time travel sort of adventure. And so we go back to first 1868. We're on the sacred timeline with Ravonna Renslayer, who we've not really seen this season until now. But then we quickly fast forward to 1893 at the World's Fair in Chicago. That's where the majority of this week's action takes place. And a lot of this episode focuses on the triumvirate of Victor Timely, played by Jonathan Majors, Ravonna Renslayer, played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw, and Miss Minutes, played by Tara Strong, who we have not seen any of them so far this season. And we really shine a light on all three of those characters and their interactions with each other. We're going to dive into all of them individually in a second here. But before we do that, I just kind of want to get your thoughts, considering that this is largely sort of a historical period piece type of an episode. We're taking place primarily in the past. We see the TVA maybe twice, very briefly in this episode, but it's largely taking place in 1893 at the World's Fair in Chicago. What did you think about that setting? What did you think about the look of it, the production design, and also how it factored into the story of what they were telling this week?
I think I like the look and production design of everything. This is one of the ones I think they just got down packed in Loki, at least so far, the way things look and feel for the most part. And we knew coming into this that this would be, you know, a time traveling kind of adventure. And so that was one of the things I was excited about, is how could they use, I think, time to tell the story, to guide us into whatever Loki and Mobius had to do. And I think, you know, a lot of it makes sense. I like the way some of these old looking alleyways look. They even definitely picked the time, specifically 1893, where there's a lot of stuff kind of happening at the time in history, and they kind of point at those things and the way the newspapers look, and this Ferris wheel's up, and it's like, okay, this World Fair's in Chicago, definitely they paid some attention to, and I think did a lot of good things with the look of it, man. And so really I just hope this continues, I think, beyond this episode. I think my fear in seeing something like this is like, wow, is this it? Like, is this the extent of what we're going to get, you know, because this is one of the only things they kind of have hinted at in terms of time. Like, we kind of seen this Victor Timely era already. And I'm like, is this maybe the only time travel thing they have up their sleeve? That's the thing I'm a little bit worried about. But I really do like the look and feel of everything. I love the costumes. I think costumes, they're kind of killing it from my point of view. And I like the attention to detail, the way what Loki and Mobius are eating, like popcorn out of a cone. It's like not even like a normal popcorn bucket. It's a cone. Like who eats out of a cone like that? I'm like, yeah, back then they probably did eat out of weird cones like that. And so things like that, I think I do enjoy those small details. And so, yeah, I just hope they keep it up. But I'm enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I thought that this was one of the standouts of the episode, and having Kasra Farahani step into the director's chair, who has been the production designer, was a brilliant move, because who better to bring to life a completely new environment that we have not seen in the series than him and the work that he's done on this series. And he had an article in The Hollywood Reporter talking about just the development of not only this episode, but just also bringing to life the production design of Loki, which I do think is one of really the hallmarks of the show. It has some of the most inspired and beautiful production design of any MCU property, movie or television series, hands down. And I think that's in large part due to the fact that they just build real sets. Like, this is all constructed practically. These are fully integrated 360 sets. I often talk about how Loki is one of the only properties in the MCU where you can actually see the ceilings of the TVA or of any interior. That's because they build them. And most of their sets that they build for other projects, they don't build those ceilings because they have to control the lighting. But when you create this integrated lighting scheme and you really take a risk and a chance to make this like a fully immersive world, we see how it pays off, and you feel really, really immersed in what they're doing. And I think that absolutely carried over into this particular period, this Gilded Age, you know. And as you said, that this is a huge sort of transitional period for America at that particular time, 19th century, you know, United States, you know, moving into a completely new era right before the Great Depression, you know. So I think that there's a lot to say there. And as I was watching the episode, especially when we get to the Victor Timely piece of it, much of it just reminded me of The Prestige, directed by Chris Nolan. It's like, that's exactly what this feels like. And so I would not be surprised if they were inspired by that in terms of creating this world and really building it out, so you did feel completely immersed by it because we were going to spend probably the better chunk of 50 minutes in this particular setting. So I thought it was a great choice. I thought it looked great. And the World's Fair itself was really cool. There was one key quote that I did see in that they had to be very considerate about how they built out all the different pavilions, because at that particular time in the research, they saw, to no surprise, that these pavilions had some racist stuff in them. You know, these were not you know, necessarily things that had, I guess, the most politically correct imagery or representations of different people. And so they had to account for that. And so they tossed in, you know, some lines in the script to, you know, try to, you know, sort of pay tribute, or not tribute, but I guess acknowledge that. And so I did appreciate those small attention to detail bits there in the episode. But we do have to talk about, again, the specific characters who were highlighted this week. And Victor Timely, obviously, is a character that we have been waiting on in terms of his appearance in this show, played by Jonathan Majors. This is a variant of Kang the Conqueror. We first saw the tease of Victor Timely in the post-credit scene of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania all the way back in February of this year, which alluded to the fact that Loki and Mobius were going to be time traveling. They were going to run into this guy, Victor Timely, at a what looks to be some sort of science or magic show in this gilded era. We couldn't really tell at that time, but ultimately Loki and Mobius are here because they are looking for Miss Minutes and looking for Ravonna Renslayer. They know Ravonna still has a temp pad. They understand that those two have gone to the past in order to, you know, sort of essentially give over the TVA guidebook to He Who Remains. Loki and Mobius aren't aware of that, but they ultimately need to figure out where Miss Minutes is, because she's going to have some information about this whole temporal aura situation, the temporal loom and the ticking time clock that's happening back in present day at the TVA there. But when we run into Victor Timely, you know, this is an interesting, I think, interpretation of this particular character. Jonathan Majors obviously returning in big, bold fashion here. Outside of this show, we have largely discussed and talked about the situation with Jonathan Majors and what he's dealing with in his personal life and the charges and accusations that have been thrown against him. I think we've litigated that. You can go back to previous episodes and listen if you choose to. I think we'll largely just sort of put that to the side and focus on really the performance here and just like what he brought to the episode. So just kind of, you know, what were your general impressions about his performance and ultimately what he brought to this role, and how different this variant of Kang is compared to who we've seen out of He Who Remains, or even the prime Kang the Conqueror that appeared earlier this year in Quantumania.
Yeah, it's still, you know, so interesting that they decided to go with Jonathan Majors, because again, as a young actor, still think about it, Jonathan Majors has not been in a ton of things. He has not been in a lot. The MCU knew that this man was dynamic and knew that he was talented enough to take on all of these different personas of Kang the Conqueror, all of these different variants of Kang the Conqueror. And so Victor Timely doesn't feel like Kang the Conqueror, and he doesn't feel anything like He Who Remains. And to be honest, that's my favorite part of his performance overall. It's like, this dude definitely feels different, especially when he begins to speak about other things. He, you know, talks about his heart, you know what I mean? Things like that. It's like, oh man, this dude definitely does feel different in a lot of different ways. And what's also interesting to me is, for so long, right, part of this episode is literally about He Who Remains has this whole contingency plan if after Sylvie kills him to give the younger version of himself this TVA guidebook, right, this manual, right? And what's so interesting about all of this is Victor Timely exists on the sacred timeline. You know, and the whole time I'm watching this is like, is he the Kang at this point in time? Does that make sense? Like, is he the one that, you know, we're supposed to be latching on to? And so I still find myself asking the question of, like, will he end up like the Kang in Quantumania, where it's like, oh, I'm nice at first, and then uh-oh, here comes this mean thing comes later, this villain thing comes later? Or is this guy really telling us the truth about his heart is different? You don't really know his heart. He's not He Who Remains. He's not the Kang of Conqueror we know from Quantumania. He's not like any of the other alternative version of himself, like Scarlet Centurion or Mortis, all the, he's really just Victor Timely in the sacred version of Kang the Conqueror. So I think his performance was very interesting, man. He is more eccentric, I think, than a lot of the other ones. He definitely feels like a those crazy scientists, right? He definitely feels like a crazy scientist dealing in this time. Like you said, a lot of it feels like the prestige, and in he's about the magic and the majestic of it all. But what is interesting still about his character is he still was out here conning people. You know what I mean? And so that's like the part I'm like, well, we can't take him for completely good yet or anything, because he's still a con artist low-key at the end of the day, no matter how smart he is. And so, man, I think his performance was fine, man. I didn't have any problem with it. I don't know if he's my favorite Kang yet. That one is still up in the air. But again, I think being dynamic and being able to differentiate from the other Kangs is what I needed, and I got that from his performance.
Yeah, I mean, from the look and the appearance of him, clearly resembling a lot of, I think, Frederick Douglass of the time, all the way to his diction and the way he enunciates mm-hmm. certain words. It's really interesting that this particular interpretation, the way that Jonathan Majors brings Victor Timely to life, it's kind of focusing, or at least integrating, I think, this idea of intellectual brilliance, but also social awkwardness, because he doesn't really know how to carry himself around large crowds. And when he's speaking to people, you can tell he's a little reserved and doesn't necessarily know how to have a full conversation. He probably spends a lot of time alone. I'm making a lot of leaps in logic here, but I'm just assuming based off of the performance, that's what we're, you know, supposed to believe about his character, which I think is an interesting choice when we talk about, you know, brilliance and intelligence and things of that nature. But he is also still a black man at that particular time. You know, this is not a guy who is experiencing, you know, the best of people. You know, there's definitely racism thrown at him. They allude to it very subtly in the episode. The one guy calls him boy. Like, that's obviously a nod to the fact mm-hmm. that people do not respect him. But they also have to acknowledge that at that time during the show, they kind of bought into the shit that he was selling, which was obviously a con, as you said. And he's really just grifting at this point, which I think is a really, really fascinating choice as well, to know that he probably is a genius, but at the same time, from his own words, he's saying, you know, I have all these ideas, I have these thoughts, but technology is not caught up. And so I have to do this in order to get over. This is the way that I can make my living, essentially. And so I thought that there were a lot of fascinating and interesting nuances, you know, to how Jonathan Majors, you know, certainly brought him to life. And then when you peel back and think about the relationship to the other variants and He Who Remains and Kang the Conqueror, I think that this episode does, you know, sort of throw out a lot of questions, considering that this, you know, is a certain character that has gotten access to the TVA guidebook and does know about some of those, you know, sort of future occurrences. And we know about the fate of He Who Remains. Do you think that it's perhaps possible that Victor Timely is the one who's destined to become He Who Remains? I know that this is like the past, and I don't know if it really adds up in terms of timeline. I don't know how that maths out. I don't know if it really matters at this point, because it's all made up anyway. But is there a world in which that could be one and the same? That could potentially be the same person, or even Kang the Conqueror from what we saw in Quantumania? Do you think that there's any like direct connections between these variants and the potential that they might actually be the same person?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think this is the one thing right now that I'd say, just because, again, knowing some of source material of Kang the Conqueror, that this is the thing they're playing with the most. And it's hard to answer this question for me, because this is nowhere near any kind of Kang origin, right? Like, we talking the original Kang the Conqueror, that boy's from like the 31st century, went all the way back in time. You know what I mean? They just dropped this book off to this little kid in the middle of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? In the 1800s. And it's like, dang, how did we get here? How was this Kang, or this variant of Kang, this Victor Timely, how was he here, and what does this mean? And I think, again, because he exists on the sacred timeline, this Victor Timely, right now in my mind, this is the one who does become the He and the He Who Remains, especially knowing that it was the He Who Remains who made this contingency plan, right, for Renslayer and Miss Minutes to go on this. So right now, that's my guess, is this is the He Who Remains version of that variant, right? Which we know, of course, not to be completely good, right? But we also know him to try to stop chaos at the same time. So maybe right now, that's my only thought, is this could be the He Who Remains that we've seen, that we've already seen at the end of time. But again, he even tries to make a distinction between himself, like, that's not me. And so I think that's the thing they're playing with the most. between both the origin story and with the viewers to be like, who is this dude and what is he going to end up becoming? And so it's becoming a very interesting story for me.
Yeah, I do think that if there's one that he is most similar, it is He Who Remains. He Who Remains also had a somewhat similar way of speaking, somewhat of a similar awkwardness to himself. Clearly has not had much interaction with any human outside of, and Miss Minutes is not human, but really any being outside of her for such a long time. And so I think that there could be a direct correlation there. The only problem is that when you start thinking too hard about this stuff, it kind of bends in on itself because it just logistically is impossible. And especially with the rules that they've set forth, which can be a little murky at times anyway, when we're talking about sacred timeline and if we're on the sacred timeline or not, that becomes a little, I guess, haphazard as well. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they stray away from that and keep them separate, because I think, you know, when you're talking about variants, like if you want to probably keep it the most interesting, it is probably leaning into the idea that this Victor Timely character, though he isn't completely good and has some ulterior motives, has probably been the best representation of any Kang variant that we've seen in terms of not being a complete narcissist or chaotic dictator, really. You know, he's just kind of a guy who happens to be really, really smart and has a few resources and maybe has a little bit of a problem trusting people and establishing partnerships. But that's really like the biggest character flaw to him, at least from what we've seen so far. We definitely, you know, should also kind of talk about the fact that in this episode with Victor Timely, I actually forgot what I was going to say about that specifically. There was another thought about him I was going to bring up. I can't remember at this particular point, but that's okay. I'll think of it. Let's actually move on to Ravonna Renslayer, because she has another very, very pivotal role in this episode. We haven't truly seen her since the end of season one. And the last thing that she essentially said was that she was in search of free will, which, you know, super ambiguous. Don't really know what that means, especially after finding out that everything you have worked for and have believed in is completely false. But we see the top of the episode start with both her and Miss Minutes. And ultimately, we find out that this plot, He Who Remains, is hatched, is to essentially create, I guess, sort of a time loop and a contingency plan to ultimately make sure and ensure that He Who Remains will create the TVA no matter what. And so we see Miss Minutes and Renslayer travel back to Chicago in 1868 to secretly drop off the TVA guidebook, which has already been introduced this season, to a young Victor Timely. So he's able to have that and have access to the information and ultimately be the architect of what we know the TVA to become. But even beyond that, Ravonna Renslayer has her own motives that are starting to become a little bit more clear in this episode. And we see her try to really establish this relationship in this alliance with Miss Minutes and especially Victor Timely once she's able to get access to him. But I do love the fact that they sort of play with this idea that this TVA guidebook is sort of like the sports almanac from Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah.
It's that thing that you go back in time that irrevocably changes just the course of everything that you know. But what did you think about how they utilize Renslayer here, the relationship that she forged with Miss Minutes and Victor Timely, how it sort of morphed and changed throughout the episode and ultimately what it started to become towards the end of this particular hour?
To be honest, right now, she's probably the most confusing character for me in the show. Like, I really don't know exactly everything she's trying to do or establish. Like you said, the last thing she said was in search of free will. And the thing is, coming into this, I don't know, I just thought I'd have, a better idea of what she wants out of all of this. And I don't think I do. I know what Miss Minutes wants. I know what Loki and Mobius and everybody else want. Renslayer, I'm like, I'm not sure exactly what still she's going for. And that being said, she made for ups and downs in the episode for me. There were moments I'm like, okay, I like that you're here. I like the energy you're giving. I like that we're chasing you too, though, because you and Miss Minutes are up to some stuff. You know what I mean? But then when we finally catch up to her, I think I expected a little bit more of a eureka moment for me of, oh, Ravonna Renslayer is, you know, still in love with He Who Remains, and she wants to do this, and she wants to be the head of the TVA and do that. And I just didn't get enough of that, I think. I needed more, I think, resolve from her in this episode, or her telling us this is what the deal was, at least from her point of view. And so I think we know about small things of how she feels, right? Of But we don't, I still don't really know what her goal is overall outside of us templing to establish the TVA. It's like, and even that feels like she's doing bidding and not necessarily for her, if that makes sense. So yeah, I didn't mind her. Again, I'm happy she was in the episode, but I wish we got a little bit more from her from the episode.
Yeah, I can't disagree. It's pretty confusing what her motivations are, because free will, as we have already said and alluded to, saying that, well, okay, it's a cool line, but what does it really mean? And then we fast forward into her reintroduction in this episode, and it feels like what she ultimately just really wants is control and power and to be in charge. And mm-hmm. she's very much of the mindset that the TVA still needs to exist and there needs to be order in this world of chaos. That's really what she's harping on, which I would say is consistent. It's definitely consistent with her character in season one. But again, you know, they haven't really fleshed out this idea of this organization and this system that has crumbled, and these people and these certain individuals within the system still choosing mm-hmm. to operate in it blindly. That they've yeah. touched on it, but I think that there's a lot more places you can go and layers that you can peel back in terms of really allowing us to understand, well, why? Because you could easily say, well, they don't know any better. They don't really have any other lifestyle to go to. I think that they've done that with Mobius, but mm-hmm. we don't know if that's necessarily the case with Renslayer, where it's like, this is my life and I want to preserve it at any cost. And that's what I'm going to do. But we have never been given any sort of clue or indication that that's what Renslayer believes. She just believes in order. And maybe that's enough, but it doesn't necessarily feel that way. She feels the least sympathetic probably out of anybody at this point. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like we should feel a little bit more for her. But absolutely. When I see the course of what happened to her throughout this episode, I laughed. I thought it was funny. I'm like, that's what you get, you know, for how you carried yourself yeah. and how you're moving, you know. And we, mm-hmm. we did see in particular, at least what they I guess that they were trying to play with and toy with was this romance that was right. starting to slowly establish between her and Victor Timely. And we know that there is canonical stuff in the comics in terms of Renslayer's romantic connection with Kang the Conqueror. That is very much a relationship, a romantic relationship that is established. And even Kang the Conqueror in the comics is the one who pursues her. You know, he aggressively goes after her. But here, they're starting to, you know, sort of play around with that idea, subvert expectations potentially, and kind of go the opposite way, because one of Victor Timely's character traits is that he doesn't want partners. He's not for the idea of partnership. He's very much mm-hmm. a solo person. And so the moment that she hints at that and wanting to establish something alongside with him, he rejects it and just knocks her completely off the ship and is like, yeah, bye. Like, we're not doing this. You know, what did you think about sort of where that ultimately sort of carried out throughout this episode? The fact that they were teasing it, that there might be some romantic connections, and then ultimately they pulled the rug out from underneath us.
I think this might be a thing that eventually does go back to the recording that we heard back in the last episode. And I think two things are connecting here. One is that this is not the he who remains that we heard in that recording, first and foremost. And I think Victor Timely is, again, constantly making allusions to that. Like, I'm not him. I'm not that person. That is not me. And I think the result of Victor Timely kind of rejecting Renslayer is also an indicator that, like, this might not be a thing with this Kang, if that makes sense. Like, this is not the one that you think you love or that you thought you loved. This is legit a variant or a different person, or not the romance that we hear on that recording, to be exact. And so that's what I kind of think is happening here, at least from my point of view. As soon as he threw her off, I was like, dang, I see that there's a connection, but like, maybe this isn't the connection. Maybe this is still not the couple that we thought we heard on that recording. Maybe it really is that original He Who Remains and not them. And so I wonder if they'll play with that more. But for right now, I think that's the way I'm thinking about it. It's like, you thought that was him, but that's not him, Shawty. So he threw you off a ship. I don't know if the other one would have did that. But he definitely probably would have did that, because he'd been wiping her mind for a long time. So I don't know everything, but I think they're just, I don't know. It feels like they're still playing with that relationship, but constantly also reminding us that this may not be the same Kang that she made might've had a thing with in that recording.
I mean, the fact that she was just dead asleep in the middle of the night and he dropped that lifeboat that way was the craziest shit ever. It was like, that's a pretty harsh dumping before things ever really got started. This is kind of the epitome of like a past life situation, I think, to what you were saying. Like, they probably at some point in time in some multiverse do have a romantic connection, but it clearly is not this one. Like, this was not meant to be that past one. Lives. And so perhaps she does have a connection with him elsewhere in the timeline. But it's also funny to see Miss Minutes in the background, which is just like character design on the part of the artist there to show all the nuances of her reactions, because she was not having it. Once she got any sort of sight and wind of the fact that they might have been establishing some sort of romantic connection, you could tell Miss Minutes wasn't here for it. She was scowling, frowning. She wasn't here. And as soon as she said partnership, she smiled because she knew it was not going to go down for Victor Timely. She had other plans for him. So all that stuff was decent. I did like the fact that they held that off, because we could still eventually go there, but I do like that they sort of put a pause on it and said, like, yeah, not now. This is not what that's going to be. I remember what I was going to say earlier, and it's moving backwards a little bit, but it is about Victor Timely once again. I was going to ask you, do you think that seeing that post-credit scene in Quantumania at the show, at the science exhibition, and seeing Loki's just fearful reaction to him on stage, like thinking that's he who remains himself and just kind of being fearful, and you got Mobius like, this is the guy you're afraid of? Do you think that seeing that early, you know, like 7 or 8 months early, kind of took away from the moment in the episode itself? I think we knew when we saw it, like, that's pulled directly from Loki. They didn't film that specifically from Quantumania, but I don't know. As I was watching it, I was like, it still works. Like, it's still a good scene, obviously, because it's constructed, you know, in a very, you know, I think satisfying way to have this reveal of Victor Timely. But I don't know. I felt like it might have been more of a gut punch if we didn't know it was coming. Like, if we just, you know, showed up to this random time period, 1893, you see the silhouette, it's like, well, is that Kang? Is that he who remains? Who is it? And then ultimately, they completely just surprise you. And it's like, oh, it's Victor Timely, leaving to even more questions, as opposed to, I think, you know, getting a heads up about it a few months early. What did you think about, you know, sort of their decision to show that off early?
No, yeah, I think it would have paid off better had they, you know, decided to wait. I even thought about the idea if they take out, not necessarily the first part of the episode, but when they put the TVA book, you know, in the mailbox slot, and then they show the little boy, part of me wishes they never showed the little boy at all. Like, just put the book in there and be like, where the heck is this book going? And then eventually you fast forward Loki again. They're like, what, why are we here? Where's Renslayer? Boom, Victor Timely pops. I think it would have been so much better for sure, because now I feel like showing that early didn't have much of any payoff at all, except for us being like, whoop, Kang's coming to Loki season 2 at some point. And so, yeah, I really wish they would have held it off. I think would have been a little bit more powerful of a scene. Not only that, but because of the pandemonium that's been happening in TVA in this season, and all the talk of He Who Remains, and not seeing him would have, again, it just would have been surprising, versus us already know he was coming at some point in a future episode. So I absolutely agree that it would have been more powerful had they held off on that a little bit longer.
Yeah, and I mean, even Quantumania, as divisive as that movie is, I think that the mid-credit scene was pretty powerful enough to see the thousands of Kangs in the stadium. You know, so you really had a great scene, and then the second one was just like spoiling us at that point, like, oh wow, we get a Loki tease as well. But that's a good point you raise about even the TVA guidebook and holding off on the reveal of that for a little bit and making us kind of wait and anticipate, well, what does that mean? What is that ultimately going to turn into later in the episode? And what questions will arise from that? And so I can't disagree with that. Before we move on to Miss Minutes, though, there's a couple of other things I want to quickly address about this episode and how it handles certain characters. One thing that I'm not really, you know, and I've been saying this all up until this point with this season, the whole temporal aura, loom, whatever that situation is that Ouroboros is dealing with at the TVA, it isn't working for me. I'm not really here for it. And that's been a central plot device as well, because ultimately one of the big key components of this episode is the fact that Victor Timely has the machine that has his temporal aura, whatever that means, that can ultimately solve the problem that's happening in the present day TVA so that everything doesn't just go fucking crazy and explode, I guess. But I'm not really a fan of the fact that at this point, Kihi Kwan is kind of regressed to just these exposition dumps about the problem. Like, he's just giving the same regressive, like, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. Like, that's kind of what he's doing now. Whereas, like, the first episode, it was such a such electricity with his character and his introduction and how he talked to other people. But now he's just like in the background. You know, what did you think about just like the TVA and still just the fact that like things are going crazy there, but nothing is really coming of it? We're kind of putting that particular moment on pause in order to deal with this 1893 stuff.
Yeah, it's man, it's so weird because I know what they're trying to do. Like they're trying to say that there's all these timelines, and in order for them to exist, we don't have a machine for that to exist. We got to fix that shit or else everything. We just can't. And it's just a lot happening. I don't know. I don't know what else they could have done either, though. I feel like that is something they had to address. But I agree that like this is the part that's not working as like it should be working. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there should have been a way to tie it into one, dumb it down a little bit, possibly. Maybe it's just too complicated of an idea that's happening. But maybe tie it into everything that is happening with the chase. Like you said, Victor Timely does have the device, but it's like it still does not feel like the reason we're there either, if that makes sense. It's like, no, that we're not just here for the device. There's other things at play and there's other things happening. It does suck that Ki-Kwan is kind of being reduced to this man, really him. And I don't know why I keep forgetting his name. What's the other dude in the TVA that's also really nerdy about all of this stuff? Oh my God. I don't know why I keep forgetting, but he also is kind of like getting sidelined somewhat in the same way where like, I feel like it could be used in a lot of other ways. Both him and Ki-Kwan to me right now should be like a team. Like they should be like, I don't know, not necessarily like the guy at the computer, right? The guy in the chair, but those low key, like the guys in the chair at this point, and they're not allowed to be like integrated into these episodes that I think have a little bit more say in plot into what's going on. So yeah, I don't know. It's weird because I like understand why this thing exists, this storyline exists, but it also just isn't working how it's supposed to work. And I think that also is a result, or as a result, Ki-Kwan is like this exposition dump guy in the other guy's exposition kind of dump guy too now. So man,
Casey.
Oh my God. I need to remember that. I don't know how I keep forgetting Casey, but yes, Casey. But yeah, I hope maybe we'll see a lot more of them in these next three episodes. That's the only hope I can have right now. And maybe all of this temporal loom stuff will come to make sense. But right now, I think I agree with you, man. It's just not working how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it's a little too much sci-fi, make-believe, gobbledygook, doesn't really make sense, whatever the fuck. Like, throughput, multiplier, temporal loom. Like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, we're just throwing words together. Throughput, multiplier? What, like, we have another complicated thing that we have to remember. I don't like that. I really just don't like that. It was, you know, I could deal with it in the first episode because things were moving at such a crazy pace. The second episode, I'm like, okay, we're still talking about this. And it's like now very much an apparent reality. Like this is the season. Like this is kind of like the central thing that is going to drive a lot of the narrative for the season. We're working against, you know, this potential ticking time bomb and these branching timelines that they have to fix. But all of the stuff just gets really jumbled and there's not enough time to really unpack it and to just like level set, I think, in a way that makes sense and that's digestible when you have so much other stuff going on as well. What I was also a little disappointed by is how we didn't really address the ending of last week's episode in this week's episode. Like we had the big moment of all the branching timelines disappearing. We saw the General Docs essentially committed mass genocide on a level that we can't even really comprehend. And it was this really sad, demure moment in the final moments of episode two. And she's nowhere to be found in episode three. It doesn't get addressed at all. That's just like left on the table. Will they circle back to it? I hope so. I would only hope. But like the way that episode two left off to how we picked up here, I'm having a hard time connecting that as well. Like it just doesn't. It's not adding up. Like the only one big connecting piece is the fact that like we knew Sylvie still had a temp pad so she can really traverse and travel anywhere, which we saw was absolutely utilized in this episode. But for such a catastrophe, you know, for it to just not be mentioned at all here was also just kind of a weird choice.
Yeah. That low key saddens me a little bit because that was to me a pretty powerful moment within the TV show. Like we talked about it last week and I wish they just would have maybe even started the episode like that. You know what I mean? Like starting the episode of the Because in this entire episode, we don't really get TVA almost anything. You know what I mean? And so it would have been nice to feel what they were feeling as everybody who works for the TVA. Again, we talked about how sad everybody was. And so it would have been like starting the episode like that, and the sadness definitely, I feel like, could have propelled us into some kind of hopeful adventure. You know what I mean? That Mobius and Loki is going on, you know, to fulfill. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a great point, and they probably, I think that's a missed opportunity not to at least start the episode with addressing some of those, you know, those ramifications of what happened at the end of last episode. That's sad.
Yeah, it's just a bit jarring. You know, we end off last week, and then you come to the top of episode 3, and you see the Marvel Studios logo, and it has this weird, wacky harpsichord, like...
It's like, oh, we're back.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, welcome to the newest episode of Loki. Like, it was just, I don't know, just a strange choice, you know, and in terms of how you transition. Like, when you watch this whole thing at once, I'm very curious to see, like, how that experience is going to be. But let's talk about Ms. Minutes, because she probably had some of the biggest developments for her character, I think, out of anybody so far in this episode, because they really dove deep into this character in ways that I don't think that not only did we not anticipate, but probably the creators of the series itself, I don't think necessarily had intentions to go these places, but I'm kind of glad that they did. But as we have already alluded to, you know, Ms. Minutes is sort of orchestrating this plan to give the TVA guidebook to a young Victor Timely, ensuring that he who remains will always create the TVA. These are apparently the last things that he told Ms. Minutes, or this was the plan that he at least told her. Like, if I was to ever perish, make sure you go to this specific time period and do this specific action. She's able to do that, but then she's also sort of orchestrating the meetup between Ravonna Renslayer and Victor Timely, ultimately to betray Ravonna Renslayer, then to eventually side with her again because she's not able to get what she wants out of Victor Timely. And we see that she has her own personal motivations, which they dive deep into. And we see that Ms. Minutes has always wanted a real body. She wants to exist as a human being. She wants to feel those emotions. She wants to be loved. And she's in love with He Who Remains, which, again, is sort of in direct opposition to this person that she's dealing with right now, which is probably a testament to maybe it isn't the same character, because both Ravonna and Ms. Minutes have made romantic passes at this guy, and it's just not working out in the ways that they thought. And so we see a lot out of Ms. Minutes. We also see kind of a sinister side to her as well, because she's probably, I think it's, you know, safe to say, the second most powerful person within this whole TVA organization, only second to He Who Remains, and he's gone. You know, we saw that Sylvie killed him last season. So what did you think about the choices here? What did you think about the fact that we have now, like, put Ms. Minutes really at the forefront of her own motivations? And so we're looking at a situation that is expanded on all sides. Everybody wants something different, and they're all working against each other essentially at this point. And Ms. Minutes is probably the most dangerous of them all, if really pushed to be so.
Yeah, I feel like we always talk about AI in this way. That's like, oh, if they're too smart, they'll kill us. You know what I mean? And never like, dang, if they're too smart, maybe they'll just be like really horny. You know what I'm saying? And like, Ms. Minutes is a good example of like, when you give something feelings, murder and control isn't the only feelings, you know what I'm saying, that they're going to have. And I think it's a really cool decision, not only to make her like this, but to make her, they specifically say he made it so she could program herself. And I was like, oh, that's a lot of ways, that's what machine learning and AI is, but it's still like very specific to Ms. Minutes of being able to do the things that she wants to do and think the ways that she wants to think. And I think it creates for a very interesting character, because she is still created from something that Kang made, or he remains made at some point. And now she wants a body, and she wants all of these human things in order to be with the person she loves. Again, I feel like this is a plot of a movie that we've seen before, but just not in this way. I feel like that feels like this. And so I have to give, I also have to talk about Tara Strong, who is killing it here. I mean, usually, of course, she's just like the happy, hello, I'm Ms. Minutes, this is what the TVA is about. But here, she gets sinister, and she gets scary. In fact, she was made to be pretty scary in this whole episode, her turning into the big old black and white clock that's also embedded within the episode, when she's in the newspapers already and things like that. I love how they gave that to her. too, but they're making her and flushing her out as a full-fledged character, and I love that, because to be honest, when you first see her in Loki, I never thought we'd be here with Miss Minutes. I really didn't. I didn't think they would take her this far, but I like how now she has her own motivations and she has things that she wants and needs to do, because now she's, before if it did feel like she was a sidekick, right? Now she feels like her own character to me. She feels like somebody who doesn't feel like a sidekick. She feels just as equal on the playing field as Ravonna Renslayer does, as He Who Remains does, because you don't know what she's going to do next, now given her motivations. So I love everything they're doing with her, man. I think they're doing a great job. This is a sciencey part that I like. Like, oh shoot, she wants to have a body. That makes a ton of sense that she'd want a body, especially if she likes Victor Timely and He Who Remains. So yeah, I think it's dope, man. I think they're doing a great job of Miss Minutes. And again, she definitely was my favorite part of the episode, because I didn't see any of this coming, and I was like, oh shoot, this is a pleasant surprise of how kind of wacky and twisted this is.
I think the reveal of Miss Minutes' motivations in this episode is some of the funniest shit ever. Like, this fucking clock is crazy as shit. Crazy. She is all of a sudden like a horror character who is willing to do whatever it takes, and we now see what she's actually capable of, which is a lot. And she says it herself at the end of the episode. It's not wise of this guy to betray the person who knows all of his secrets. It's like, this is a scorned woman at this point who is just willing to betray pretty much anybody in her path to achieve and obtain what she wants, which is power, which that's really what it is. She wants to sit at the side of He Who Remains and rule the TVA together, just like what Ravonna wants. And that is coming back to bite her in the ass, because Victor Timely rejects her. He's not willing to have that. He's like, I'm not even capable of giving you a body. I don't know how to do that. It's 1893. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? I can't turn a clock into a person. And so she gets crazy, and she's also like saddened and probably even heartbroken as well. We see she tries to profess her love and tell him I love you, but she's not even able to say it enough in time before she ends up at the end of time. And she's like, oh darn, I couldn't even say it, you know. And so I think it's hilarious. I think it's great. It's a great choice though. It's a really interesting way to take this character who was really just a mascot in season one. They were just this mascot as a physical representation, almost a comedic representation of the TVA and its history, who's now become something of a force to be reckoned with, who I think will certainly impact all that we see coming in the next three episodes as well. Like, who knows what Miss Minutes can be capable of, especially because she does know so much and we're not even fully aware of all the information that she has at our disposal, but it's likely everything, because she was there pretty much probably from the beginning. I think she might have been the first comrade, and as we know, she's, you know, stood beside the side of He Who Remains for eons. And so I'm curious to see where that goes. I do want to ask, because the way the episode ends off is, you know, both of them, her and Ravonna, ending up at the end of time in the Citadel. We see that they recreated the set from season one, and we see a decomposing He Who Remains, you know, still in that chair after Sylvia's killed him. And so now, you know, Sylvia is essentially kicked Ravonna to the end of time, since that's what she apparently wanted. She's like, I'm going to give you what you want. I'm going to kick your ass to the end of time. Mm-hmm. But she still leaves her with a temp pass, so Ravonna can still go wherever she wants. But Miss Minutes is also there. And she tells her, like, you know, I know a secret about you, but it's going to make you really, really angry. I'm going to tell you, but it's going to piss you off. Do you think that there's like a new secret, or is it just the fact that everybody has had their mind wiped and she has had a previous life? She has a lifestyle as, from what we see, it looks like to be a principal from what they showed in season one. Do you think they're going to go that way and ultimately just like show her that information and show her the previous life she had, or could there be something else that we're not even aware of that would, you know, potentially make her even more angry?
I think that's it. I think Miss Minutes is just going to be like, look, he wiped your memory. Not only that, he took you from the timeline. Like, I think, you know, Miss Minutes at this point, knowing her motivations, is trying to get Renslayer as far away from He Who Remains as possible, at least, you know, to some degree. That is, but I think she's really just going to tell Ravonna Renslayer, like, this is the real, and this is what He Who Remains did to you. And I think, also think she wants her to be angry with her too at the same time, while also like splitting away from Victor Timely / He Who Remains a little bit. Also, I think she wants Ravonna to be like, also kind of in that rebellious phase that Miss Minutes is in, because again, it still doesn't feel like It feels like Ravonna Renslayer is the only person right now who's not in this rebellious phase, right? Her and some of the other agents, and I think this is going to be like the coming to Jesus moment for her. That's the only ideas I really have. There could be some other plot twist in there. There could be some. She might just tell him that they were lovers too. Like, y'all used to be a thing, and then he wiped your mind or something like that. You know what I'm saying? But I think that's the extent of it.
You know, usually with Marvel, the most obvious answer is the answer. So it probably is that information. I would hope it's not, though, because we already know that. Like, we knew 2 years ago that she's had a past life and she used to be a principal. And so if that was just ultimately the reveal and they left the episode off in that way as if it's a cliffhanger where it's like, oh, damn, I can't wait to hear what she has to tell her because I don't know what it is. It's like, well, no, we do know what it is. So why would you end the episode that way? Like, why is that the key piece of information that is all of a sudden like, supposed to grip me and hook me to come back next week? Because we know that. So I'm hoping, I'm just like optimistically, maybe, you know, maybe false optimism, hoping that it is something else, that she just has another bombshell that she can drop on her, you know.
She's a variant.
Well, you know, there that is. That's also like crazy as well, you know. I don't know. I
King the
like
Conqueror variant
else.
Would be pretty crazy.
Now that would be crazy. That
like
would
if and Ravonna and, Renslayer as a King the Conqueror variant would be kind of nuts.
Yeah. And there's precedence for that. I mean, Sylvie is a Loki variant.
Exactly.
So, you know, having multiple genders, you know, and things of that nature, that would be wild. That would definitely throw a fucking wrench in all of this. I mean, I don't even know if they can handle that type of story at this point, but I would be here for it just for the shits and giggles and the chaos that it would cause. But we'll see. We'll definitely see. Before we wrap up, though, I do want to at least address Sylvie because she does have a presence in this episode. Yeah. Mostly as like Michael Myers, I'm coming to kill you type shit. That's really what she's doing here because she's still not having it. How did you feel about her presence? I think that, you know, she's probably another victim of having some reduced screen time and not really being able to do a little bit much here. I felt that maybe the shades of her being so angry and just blinded by this hatred of He Who Remains, it's starting to catch up with the writing. It's not really adding other depths and possibly making us as an audience care a little bit less about her because she's just showing up with a big machete ready to stab this motherfucker like at any given point in time. How did you feel about just how they deployed her here? The fact that she was like always around, always present, and I guess ultimately kind of made the choice, maybe some element of growth where she does not kill Victor Timely. She's able to listen to him and ultimately have some reserve and allow him to, you know, proceed on and not take him, I guess, off of the chessboard at this point.
Yeah, she says, "Don't make me regret this." That sword she has is huge, by the way. I was like, what are you doing with this big ass sword? It's hella scary. But I think maybe this is just one of those episodes where they only could do so much with her, because I still feel like she is one of the more important characters in the show. Hopefully, at least, because she was, I mean, she's the center of season one, right? You know, and so I really feel like hopefully we'll see a lot more with her. We still have a lot more questions. Why was she in the TVA when Loki was going through that time stuff in episode one? You know what I mean? Like, I think there's still a lot of Sylvie that we're going to get. But I think it was that realization that she had at the end to let Victor Timely go with Mobius and Loki here that is going to hopefully propel us into a different kind of conversation with her character in these upcoming episodes, more than just I'm angry and running at things. Hopefully that's at least what I'm looking for. What I'm also looking for is we still haven't really gotten like a sit down with her and Loki. Like, even when Loki put up on her at McDonald's, it was still like, look, this is life or death. I don't really have time to talk about much. Like, I know we have a past, this and that. And that being said, she still settled down in that McDonald's because she seen the love that was happening in that McDonald's. You know what I mean? There's still a romance there. And we're about to be in episode four. We really haven't talked about any of the romance, you know, kind of things between her and Loki. So I'm hoping she was sidelined in this episode and kind of made for the anger in this episode to eventually blossom some of those other ideas, her and Loki, to maybe talk about her place in all of this, how maybe she is coming around to be part of the team to try to fix her little euphoria that she has in Oklahoma at McDonald's. Maybe she is going to be part of these adventures, but we'll have to see. But those are my hopes, at least with her going forward, is that, yeah, she got sidelined this episode, but I think there's more coming for her in the future.
I got a feeling she's not working at McDonald's no more, because there's no way they're allowing her to take all this fucking time off to do this damn time travel. She got to be missing a lot of shifts at this point, chasing around these motherfuckers across time. Like, come on, you chose to flip these burgers and to serve these nuggets. Like, where you at? You gotta do the job, you know, but she's everywhere else but her job, you know? And so, she's going to get fired on her day off. That's what's going to happen. But, damn, you know, buddy. I think the choice, you know, here is probably a temporary one, as you said, that she's, you know, briefly sidelined here, but the focus will revert back to her. We had to shift and reintroduce and introduce some new characters here. I think that, you know, it did start to wear on me a little bit that she's just like always angry, always upset, always like, he has to die. He has to die. Like, that's really what it's become at this point. That's kind of her shtick. So I'm hoping it goes elsewhere, because she had so many different layers in season one. We got to learn so much about Sylvie, and there hasn't been as much of that this season. It's mostly been questions, and it's mostly been this revenge and anger that she's holding on to, rightfully so. But I think we do need to go deeper with her character. So I'm hoping, certainly, that by next week's episode, we will. I did lie. I do have one more thing that I do want to bring up. There was an Easter egg. I'm not really an Easter egg guy, but there was one I think is worth calling out. That's the Balder the Brave statue that appeared in this episode, which is really funny. You know, I think that's like a cool nod to Marvel Comics. Balder the Brave is Thor's brother in the comics. But also what's interesting is that Balder the Brave was supposed to appear in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And he was going to be played by Daniel Craig, James Bond himself, which is crazy to think about. Yeah. It ultimately didn't work out. I know that the director of this episode also said, you know, even at one point, they were considering putting Balder the Brave in the original Thor movie. He was going to be a part of that film until they ultimately decided to take him out. Any thoughts on just like that inclusion and the fact that, like, we're once again kind of reminded of the fact that even as like this TVA employee, this TVA champion now, Loki is still a god. He's still like a part of a litany of champions that come from Asgard and Jotunheim, but I think we've gotten so far into the show and we've seen so much out of him. You know, we're kind of like Mobius in that situation. Like, oh yeah, you are a part of that, aren't you? Like, I had a very similar reaction. What did you think about that inclusion and just how, you know, sort of Loki took that information?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, when you're operating the TVA for so long, it's like hard to remember. I think some of these things, these people, man, because Loki really is this huge god and powerful being and part frost giant, and he is the god of mischief, and he will disappear one way and show up another way, and there's a bunch of variants of him. But I really like that. I don't know, a lot of this stuff feels self-reflective for Loki, right? We didn't get like a ton of Loki moments in this episode, but these past couple episodes we have been like, where was it, X5, Rafael Casals character, I forgot his name, X5 is like, Loki, these are the things you've done. And Loki's like, you know what, these are the things I've done. And in this episode it's like, look, you are God, like, you're literally right there. And he's like, Thor's not that tall, you know what I mean? Like, that's his reality, is other people's gods, right? And he is a part of that. And so I just thought it was interesting that they threw all of that in there, because I think he's going to have to use some of his godliness in these upcoming episodes. Hopefully, that's at least my hope. I love seeing episode one where he got to use his powers. We still rarely get to see him use his powers. And so I'm hopefully that's like a something for him that continues to come to fruition for him, is this, again, I think this self-reflection of who Loki really is. It's literally the name of the show. Let's talk about Loki and everything that he has going on. And so, yeah, I think that's why they threw it in there. But then also, again, just really cool to be like, oh, yeah, Balder, that was supposed to be a thing. It's probably not going to be a thing anymore, but it was a thing at one point. So I'm glad that was a cool little Easter egg they threw in there.
Yeah, and another great reminder of this journey that this Loki has been on. We've talked about his journey from being a villain to an anti-hero to just really a full-blown hero at this particular moment. And I think that's a testament to how much they have done in terms of the development of this version of Loki. Because I would venture to say that, you know, the Loki we saw in Infinity War and how close he had gotten with Thor after everything that had happened was a lot of ground that they covered, and it was great. And so I was apprehensive coming into the series, like, well, we saw him grow. We saw him evolve. How are you going to get me to buy in and believe in, you know, this version of the character who's fresh off of the invasion and the Battle of New York? And I think, you know, now for me, it's safe to say that this version is even further along at this point, because they really did and nailed it in the first episode of Loki, like the series premiere. They kind of nailed it off the top, like him literally just watching all of the events in the MCU. It's just like him watching the MCU. Like he got all the Blu-rays and they basically just showed him all the events of the MCU and he caught up with us. And so like now he's in the place where it's like, damn, you see how you changed and evolved over time, and you saw like who you really are underneath all of this stuff. And so I like that they continue to allude to that yes, he's a guy, but he's also now kind of humbled himself to a place where it's like, he's not even thinking about that on a regular basis. Like, of course, he can still bring those powers out and still be mischievous, as we saw in the previous episode with Brad Wolf, but he's much more reliant on his wit and his intelligence and his empathy that we've seen, as opposed to his powers. Of course, he can't use his powers in the TVA, but even now, like, he doesn't just utilize them whenever. You know, I think he's very reserved in whenever he does use them, unless he feels like he needs to. And so I just like, you know, that illusion, and also the fact that, like, this familiar relationship and Loki and his place within the whole Odinson family is really something that's always going to be kind of a point of contention to him, because he was raised under a false pretense. He was raised to believe that he was somebody that he truly wasn't. And I love we just keep fucking burying Odin, because he should be buried for all the shit he did. Like, from Ragnarok all the way up until now, it's like, yeah, Odin might have been like a low-key piece of shit. You know, he might have been trash. And so I love that small stuff is kind of thrown out there to allude to that. And so it was a great nod, a great Easter egg for sure. But folks, those are all of our thoughts on episode 3 of Loki season 2. If you've checked out this episode on Disney+, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, that's all we have for this episode of Two Black Nerds. Thank you again for tuning into another podcast. We will, of course, be back next week to talk about episode 4 of Loki season 2. We will be back to break down all the latest and greatest and all the key developments that come from the course of that episode. And in the meantime, check out all of our other episodes that are available on podcast platforms right now. But until then, we will see y'all next time.
Yes, sir. We are Audi 5000. Please check out our Two Black Jedi and Two Black Sith collection at TwoBlackNerds.com. And remember, always bet on black. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Two Black Nerds, where we're too black,
too nerdy.
We out, y'all. Peace. Show me what you got, cause I don't want no more minute man. Work me up. Show me what you got, cause I don't want no.